This is The Guardian.
I'm Grace Dent, and this is Comfort Eating from The Guardian. A podcast where we pay homage to the lesser celebrated foods in life. Because even as a restaurant critic, I believe the food that matters most is often that snack you cobble together when you're curled up on the sofa. Each week, I ask my guest to lift the lid on what comfort foods have seen them through their lives. Because you can tell a lot about a person from what they eat behind closed doors. Hello, friends. Welcome back once again to my kitchen. The sun is shining. I've scooted my very noisy cats out into the back garden. I am counting down the seconds, just having a quick tidy up before this week's guest arrives. Time, though, for a little fondant fancy. My guest is one of the most interesting comedians Britain has to offer, and she has recently dipped her toe into screenwriting for telly with the brilliant Channel 4 series, The Change. Yes, Bridget Christie is on her way over. Bridget is an award-winning stand-up comedian, actor, and writer. After getting into comedy later than most, she won the Edinburgh Comedy Award for Best Show with a BIC for her in 2013. Bridget's comedy is bold and she is unafraid to tackle some of life's darker corners. But more importantly, she's very, very funny. In The Change, Bridget stars as a woman called Linda, who's told she's going through the menopause and decides to shake things up. A character very close to my heart. I cannot wait to find out the secrets to her talent. Here we go. I'm just going to finish this cake first, though.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Bridget Christie.
Hello.
Welcome to Comfort Eating.
Thanks for having me.
It's so lovely to see you. I have been so moved by The Change that you've just written for Channel 4.
Oh.
And one of the things that's moved me so much is that it pivots around the idea of invisible labour that women do. Could be men, if there are men listening. I'm sure that some men do this invisible labour, but it's mostly women who are doing all these things that nobody notices. So to start today, I've got a quiz. See my things to do list here? My book of invisible, emotional and physical labour that I do. It's my things to do list.
Ooh.
I'm going to tell you three things from my things to do list.
Right.
And you've got to guess which is the false one.
Okay.
Number one, have number 47 got my wheelie bin? Number two, are Newham Council sending me those scratch cards for parking permits?
Right.
Number three, is there a poo in the cupboard?
So I've got to work out which one isn't
Which one isn't real?
I mean, I want to believe there is a poo in the cupboard.
There was a poo in the cupboard, yeah. So that's a real one.
Yeah, I thought that would be real.
It was a cat poo.
I think it might be the bin.
It was the parking permits, and I'm offended that you thought that I'd have lost my bin because I've got stick-on numbers on my bin. Because I'm that organised, because I've got to that point in the change of my life where these things matter. Do you want me to carry on?
I kind of do.
Now it's once again time to find out what my guest likes to eat behind closed doors. What is Bridget Christie, award-winning stand-up, actress and writer, choosing for her snack? Unfail the snack. Oh.
Right. You look so disappointed.
Okay. So, okay, I'm looking at a big wooden chopping board here that has thick slices of sourdough bread, a block of vegan spread that you might put on the bread first, but the main ingredient I'm looking at with its bright yellow lid is a tub of Marmite. Now, famously, Marmite's one of those things you either love or hate. You clearly love it. Tell me, Bridget, what do you love about Marmite?
Every single thing about it. I struggle to have days or periods of time without it.
Do you ever just eat it like kind of?
I do lick it off the knife.
Do you lick it off the knife?
Yeah.
Do you think that's the right amount to lick off a knife, or would you go smaller than that?
No, that's about the right amount.
I've never used that.
Do you not like Marmite?
I do like Marmite. But what I think is you just need a very, very thin scraping. How do you feel about people that have it like too thick?
It can't be too thick or too thin. It just has to be completely perfect.
Tell me when you eat Marmite on toast like this.
Every morning.
Every single morning.
Or at night and at lunchtime, or just...
Do you eat any other types of food? just the Marmite. When did you start eating Marmite?
My mum came home with a jar. I remember her coming home from town. Me and my siblings sat round in silence. I don't know why. So I'm the youngest of nine kids. This would have been, I should have looked it up really, when Marmite came out. I know, or when it became popular. I want to think it's early 80s. We sat around the table at 4:30 and we all tried it. Half of us couldn't believe how disgusting it was, and the other half, that was it for life. And I couldn't believe how amazing it was. The only times I wouldn't have it every day was if I was on holiday. It's not really a French thing, Marmite.
You know, when you go through Gatwick Airport and it says the things that you can take in your handbag and how big they can be, there's a sign by the security. There's a jar of Marmite now to tell people the biggest Marmite you can take through.
No!
It's because of people like you, Bridget.
This isn't true. Is this true?
This is true. Here's a lipstick, you can have that, and here's a moisturiser, and for the weirdos, here's Marmite, honestly.
That is fantastic. Mm-hmm. So if you stay like in a Premier Inn or wherever, you get those tiny little plastic sachets.
Yeah.
I should probably get loads of those for when I travel.
It's the absolute edge, I think, of like ick. In what a British person would eat, though. I don't think we go any... You know, that kind of... I don't think we would ever eat anything kind of more intense than that. I think that's the level that we have.
Mustard?
It's not as bad as Marmite.
Are you not a fan of Marmite?
I wouldn't eat it obsessively every single day.
Why not?
You were born in 1971, the youngest of nine children. You were raised in Gloucester, but your parents, Peter and Mary, were both Irish. Logistical question to start us off. Where did you all sit for dinner? Was it one big table?
It wasn't a big table, but it had two leaves.
Yeah.
I was like, not leaves, leaves.
Leaves, leaves, leaves.
Two massive dock leaves that came out. Yeah. And that would be pulled out. So there would often be like an amazing casserole or stew that we could have when we got in, because then Dad would get in from Wall's Ice Cream Factory around 6-ish and he'd have his dinner. So we'd either eat together or separately. Remember, Mike was 13 when I was born. So that's 13 under 13 under. Yeah, so I don't remember us all being, apart from weekend, like Sundays, I don't remember all of us being around the table every night after school. So I'm thinking that maybe the older ones, they were doing homework or something like that.
But how do you keep...
Well, we sat closely together.
How do you... So not a lot of elbow room.
My sister Anna used to take her chips with her if she had to leave the table.
How do you cope with cooking for that many people, though? It must be like mass catering.
We ate really well. So my parents, they got really good ingredients. Like, they would buy good food.
Yeah.
But they would buy, like, I think it was 72 pints of milk a week. Maybe maybe 5 boxes of cornflakes, something like that. A lot of bread, a lot of potatoes.
You see, I grew up in a, like, you know, there was me and my little brother, and my big brother had already moved out. And just the thought of, I can't get my head around it. Big
11 people.
A big family.
No, but I didn't. I thought that was normal until I went to other people's houses. I remember going to my friend's house, and there was just her and her older sister, and it was really quiet, the house.
Yeah.
I was like, this house is so quiet. Like, how can you live in this quietness? Like, it, I felt like I would kind of go mad in an empty, quiet house. But then when I left, I craved like quiet then when I was older. Mm. I always liked, and I don't know if this is because I grew up in a busy house, when I then started working, I would have to come in and just have 5 minutes to myself or 10 minutes to just even just sit in my room. I'm pretty sure that's from not having that space. I used to go in the garden a lot when I was little.
So no food fights?
Food. Oh, God, we wouldn't waste food. No, we that is something we wouldn't do. And we would have treats Friday night and Sunday. Sunday coming back from church, Friday night, Dad would come back from work and, like, throw nuts and crisps and stuff into the telly room, and we'd all go, like, and try and grab them. That was it. Fish and chips on a Friday.
Who was the cook, your mum?
Yes, in those early days, yeah. And then Dad did a lot as we got older.
Your dad was quite, like, hands-on. He
very hands-on. I talked to him about that recently, and he was like, well, why would I watch your mother doing everything? It was really, like, simple and straightforward to him. He would come in from work, and so this was when you didn't have disposable nappies, then you would have the terries, the towels.
Yeah.
So they would go into a bucket for soaking, and then my dad would wash them out and hang them out when he got in.
Oh, my God.
Well, because Mum was doing everything, you know, and she worked as well part-time.
Being Irish in the 70s, your parents made sure you and your siblings all went to Mass every Sunday. Was it a very religious upbringing?
Yeah, I'd say so, yeah. Yeah, but it was very important. Their faith was very important to them. There was lots of pictures of popes. My uncle was a priest. My mum was very... I think she said once if she was not married by a certain age, she would have gone into a convent, probably.
Pictures of popes. Where was the picture of the pope?
In the front room, and there was, you know, Last Supper tableaus, things like that. That celebration, like Easter, that encapsulates so many things like rebirth and, you know, all things like that.
No, I went to the dates. Sunday school and was confirmed Church of England when I was about 12. And even though I don't really go to church yet, I think that type of stuff is still...
Stories
are great. Still in you, you know.
Oh, yeah. It doesn't... I think my upbringing with these celebrations and with these religious events, that may be why I love ritual and celebration and costumes and incense and that kind of otherworldliness. Bells and smells. I love a bell and a smell, yeah. Me.
I'm going to go back to you as a child at home. So you're the youngest.
Yeah.
So were you always the entertainer? In the family, were you the little What were you standing on a raised plinth, tap dancing?
I'm afraid to say it's such a cliche, but I just could not show off enough.
Give me an example.
This is a story that my dad likes, which is that I think him and some of his friends were around, and I had gone in and said something, and no one responded. And so I stormed out and came back in and said, if there's one thing I hate, and I would have been about four, I think, it's being ignored. And then stormed out again. But I like the idea that I'd come in. Come back in. Oh, listen, guys.
Sorry, Liza Minnelli quote.
Yeah, always, you know, doing accents, messing about, you know, dancing, trying to be funny.
Yeah, but did they laugh at you?
I think, well, did they laugh? I do remember making them laugh, yeah. We used to do plays because there wasn't a lot of money getting around, so we did make a lot of our own fun. So we would build things in the garden and have lots of games, but we would also put on plays. And I remember that I wasn't given speaking parts, especially when I was very little. So I would be a tree or a box.
That must have been hell.
I
can see that that upsets you.
But I'll tell you what I did do.
Go on.
My God, was I a good tree. And that was the best box you'll ever sit on.
When you go to St. Peter's Roman Catholic High School in Gloucester, mm-hmm. and you're this natural performer, do the nuns appreciate that?
My drama teacher always said to me, imagine what you could do if you put your mind to it or something. That was also said to me at... What did they say at drama? No, but I do work really hard. I really resent people thinking that I don't work hard. Like, I work really hard. Like, this idea that I've just come up with it, you know.
I love the fact that you are actually in a one-woman argument with yourself now. I didn't actually say I know you work hard.
No, but yes, I'll have you know, Grace.
So you leave school at 15, which, you know, lots of people have done, but not many 15-year-olds are members of a biker gang. Tell me about this time in your life.
I was in a group, from before I left school, of, bikers and stuff. I left school and I just lied about my age and got a job. Actually, I was working before I left school.
Okay. I see this is so much to unpick here. You've just made more questions for me, to be
think
honest.
Think of the biker gang as my social life.
Yes, but we're not talking about BMXs. We're talking about...
Motorbikes.
Right. Why motorbikes?
I like bikes and I met some bikers in the pub. It's as simple as that.
Right,
and I got a 125, so you can get... You can ride a bike when you're, how old was I, 16 or 17, anyway.
Where did you go on the bike? Let's give me an example of somewhere that you and your biker gang.
Mine, yeah, I was the head of it. The TT races, Wales, the Brecon Beacons, France.
Did you have a leather jacket?
Yeah.
Tell me about going to France on your bike. What did you eat?
Baguettes and laughing cow cheese.
What a duo.
That's about it. I don't think I went to the toilet for 2 weeks.
You just get in the baguette and then you get in the laughing cow, la vache qui rit, it's called in France.
Oh, clever.
La vache qui rit.
How posh are you?
La vache qui rit. Do you have a knife to spread the cheese or are you just...
I have a feeling that I would put the triangle in the baguette and squash it down and then eat that.
How much... bread and lavashki reed do you think you have to eat before you get constipated?
I just remember being constipated for the whole 2 weeks, so probably much on the first day, pretty much.
Is that why you carry a large water bottle with you all times now?
I'm sorry, I don't want to put you off your Marmite. I got really ill a couple of weeks ago and I had to be on antibiotics, and someone said to me you should take probiotics, which I did. And honestly, I was actually thinking that it would be difficult for me to spend a lot of time with someone recently because my guts have been so bad,
yeah.
Noisy and gurgling and farting and everything. Taking these have you heard anything from me?
Not, for the record, you haven't gurgled or farted once.
No.
And it's been 20 minutes.
That is not like me. If my kids were here, they would be like, why are you so quiet?
Are you okay?
Yeah.
So you leave school.
Yes.
You're into bikes. What other things are you doing when you first leave school?
I worked in the local newspaper, the Gloucester Citizen, as an editorial assistant. I lied about my age, said I was 16, but I wasn't. And then I actually left there because the editor was rude. And I remember one day he threw a £10 note on my desk and said, get me a McDonald's. And I didn't want to go to McDonald's. Even then, I wasn't a fan. And I said, if you want me to get your lunch, you can ask me nicely. And he said, get my McDonald's now or you're sacked. And I said, we're too late because I resigned. And then I ran out. And like it was in the newsroom and you don't do that to an editor.
No.
And then I answered an advert in the Gloucester Citizen for a farmhand. And it was the worst three days of my life. So I rode my motorbike, my RS250 Honda, out to a farm in the middle of, I think it was in Frampton-on-Severn, out that way, to a dairy farm, lying in my overalls. Oh, my God. And everything that I had to do was my worst fear. It was like your idea of a dairy farm, like from the 50s. It was a bit more like that, you know, where there's cows that are grazing.
Yeah.
This is partly why I'm a vegan now. I had to be there 6 o'clock to either get the cows in or take the cows out and then come back at 12, milk them and then walk them back. Oh, my God. Even standing next to a cow is a little bit stressful.
They're enormous.
They're enormous, let alone getting them like a shepherd. What's a cow shepherd called? A dairy farmer.
A coward?
They're not.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, Grace Dent here. One more thing. If you love comfort eating, then you'll love my new book, Comfort Eating, What We Eat When No One's Looking. It's available order now. There's an ebook and an audiobook if you want me to read it to you, with chapter headings like why butter makes everything better and why potatoes are proof of a higher power. How can you resist? Comfort Eating is packed with funny, moving stories about my family and my childhood, as well as recipes and stories about recording the show. While you weren't having the best time on the dairy farm, you were also part of the Gloucester Operatic and Dramatic Society. So you wanted to be an actress quite young.
Loved it.
I want to be an actress.
Loved Gloucester Opera. Yeah, always. Love learning lines. Loved. Always wanted to do that.
So then you get a scholarship?
When I was 23, yeah, to go to drama school. So I started auditioning when I was about 21. Got a place. I remember getting the letter. I was working at Royal Mail on Walls Roundabout, which was the headquarters. And I remember looking out and thinking, this letter might change my life.
Did it change your life?
Oh, well, in the sense that I went to drama school for 3 years, but when I graduated, I didn't get a single... Linda is the first proper role I've had in my whole life. And I was 50 and I had to write that and create that show and cast myself in it.
So tell me a bit about that time. You've graduated from the Academy of Live and Recorded Arts and you're trying to make it as an actress. Were you doing lots of auditions?
constantly, either doing really well, it's in the bag. Casting director said, I'd be amazed if you didn't get that. Terrible ones as well, like terrible, terrible. That is the most humiliating experience.
Is this for TV shows,
everything,
adverts?
Films, everything.
And every time it's a no, or just a silent no.
It's, I'm down to the last two, I'm down to the last three, or it's a no. The whole gamut of outcomes, which I'm sure most actors
and
get.
What? How do you react to that? Do you think, oh, I just need to be better, I just need to be...
No, I didn't think that, because there were times where I thought that, and this is not being arrogant, you know instinctively when you've done something well or something badly. It's a terrible, terrible feeling, or it's a great feeling.
But I mean, acting is so much about how you look and the pressure to look perfect. I mean, does that not drive you a bit mad?
I never got to that point. But because I'm a stand-up, it's totally irrelevant. So that's something that once I started having more control and destiny over my career and what I was doing, which was when I realised I cannot live like this. I cannot live, I cannot have so little control over my life and what I'm doing, because it's literally waiting at that time for a man to pick me.
Yes.
And the reasons can be so random and so superficial. And such bullshit, like the producers want this person, or we're just seeing a load of you and we've already cast it. That happens.
You're feeling pretty demoralised.
Yeah, and about acting.
About acting.
Yeah.
Why do you go into comedy?
Genuinely, to me, comedy is my whole life. I could not live a day without it.
Had you ever stood up at any point and, you know, done a set or...
I had stood up in front of people in social situations, weddings, stuff like that. But stand-up is very different. It's a very different beast. And I'm so glad I went into it, because you learn so much about yourself. It's just so totally addictive.
Yeah.
And it's so good for you as a person to have that in your life. I'll never not do it. It's the most effective equalizer that you could possibly do. If you ever think that, so for example, The Change, it was a tsunami of love after that came out, really, and it was overwhelming. Mm. And I did a gig and it was absolutely awful. Yeah, and I was like, brilliant. No, but I got in the car after and I was like, yes.
What has evened it out?
Do not for a moment
believe your own hype.
Think that. Well, I didn't anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, the show was its own, had its own thing. So I was able to kind of step away from it.
For about a decade of your career, you're performing to small crowds. And then in 2013, you win the Foster's Prize, basically the Edinburgh Comedy Oscar. You win it for A Bick for Her.
I did.
Which was all about modern day sexism and misogyny. Like, I remember seeing it.
Did you?
Yes.
Oh my God. Thank you for coming.
I came along to that and I was almost at the front and I was embarrassed because I didn't want to make eye contact with you and kind of feel as if like I was stalking you, when it is actually just literally your comedy gig and anybody could. Do you know what I mean?
There's always people there. Yeah.
This seems like a bit of a turning point, because you suddenly become a household name, new level of recognition. Can you remember the exact moment that things changed and you realised you'd become famous?
I don't recognise any part of that fame household name thing.
Yeah.
For me, it was that I think that was my 10th show possibly, and I was 42. So I did that show and I remember being in Edinburgh and I remember thinking, oh, the show sold out, and I'd done loads of shows where nobody was coming, like you say. So that was how I judged it, on having full rooms and good reviews. And then the nominations came out and that was really exciting. And then winning was really exciting. But there was no...
There was no moment.
There was no, I'm famous now or I'm really well known. What was good to me was that the business side of it. Oh, well, right. Well, this means that I might be able to tour now.
Yeah.
That was the thing that I felt really excited by, was the fact that I might now be able to go to London. And I did a really long London run off the back of it. So that was the amazing thing for me.
You've spoken in the past that, you know, you were out in the park and you were running and that you were flashed at by a man. And you've said that, you know, this is an image that comes to your mind often.
Yeah.
And you weren't sure at all. Do you use this as something that you can use on stage, you know, on a comedy stage? Because it is very dark. But in the end, you do. In other areas of your life, you are very private. You don't reveal yourself. How do you work out what's too dark?
There's no. It's very instinctive. There isn't a subject that is too dark ever. I strongly believe that there is no subject that can't be talked about. It's intent and it's context, and it's who's saying it and why. And I've got a thing which I do to myself, and it's this: if I am called to a court of law and I have to stand up in front of people and they're listening, can I justify it to those people? And if I can, it's in. And if I can't, it isn't. And if I can't make it funny, it also isn't in. I expose myself fully 100% in my feelings and emotions and passions and the things that I believe in.
Mm.
But with private things, it's not just you.
Mm.
I like to use the world as my inspiration and then me sort of moving through that world. That's sort of my comfort zone. I think then there's all sorts of permissions that have to be asked. And, you know, like with my childhood and things like that, would be like, oh,
do you ask
sisters
permission?
And brothers.
Do you ask permission? I don't ask permission from my family for anything I say about them, because I think that if you don't want me to write about you, you should stop being so interested.
Yeah, they should be flattered.
Your Channel 4 show, The Change, is about a woman going through the menopause. And you've talked about going through your own menopause. Have you found that your appetite has changed during this time? I feel like it has with me.
I've had to really get on top of my symptoms.
Yeah.
And something things that give me hot flushes and make me feel bad is alcohol. Too much coffee, like dark chocolate, like things. My heart palpitates as well if I slightly overeat or eat things that are really like dark chocolate, anything like that with caffeine or spices. No, just not good for me at all. So, like, I've had to really think about what I'm eating because I will feel the.
I think that I just have to eat much less. I feel like
much less.
I just feel like
I'm plainer.
I just feel like everything I eat now, I just can't get away with anything at all. I used to be able to, and I don't drink alcohol at all now.
No, I cut it out for about 9-10 months.
Did you feel better?
Slipped back in, yeah, but it's massively reduced. Massively, I would say that I drink rarely now. Like I don't cane it at all.
Lots of women say that they find that their menopause symptoms, they get so gritty that they consider giving up work altogether.
No.
I know. I mean, I think at one point that did cross my mind that I couldn't really be bothered to carry on the way that I was going. But not you, not me either. Where do you think this confidence is now coming from?
Lack of estrogen.
Yeah.
I know that kind of, but it's like, it's not that we've got more testosterone. It's that the mix of it becomes more equalised. That's right, isn't it? So we don't get more. It's just that because our estrogen is depleting, it's kind of balancing out a bit more.
You know, you said before, it took you until you were 50 to actually go and write your own thing to get onto television and to no longer sit waiting for a man to decide whether you were beautiful or funny enough to give you something. Do you think it's the estrogen going? It's this fuck it-ness that comes in, really?
No, so those things aren't connected, right? So this show is about 5 to 7 years in development.
Yeah.
And I'm glad, actually, that it has taken this long, because I think the menopause element of this show is one of the things that has meant that it was commissioned.
Mm.
And also there being more conversations about women over 50 in our stories. There just aren't enough of them at all.
Do you know, I'm really fascinated by that you've turned 50 and you've bought yourself a motorbike.
I did. I bought a massive Triumph motorbike. Really big, heavy bike. I was really scared picking it up.
When was the last time you were on a bike before?
32 years ago.
Oh, my God.
And I just got, I thought...
That is so, like... not brave. I don't like that. It's so forceful to go out and just go and buy the bike.
It was. And I remember going down to pick it up and I hadn't been that nervous for a long... I just thought I was going to drop it immediately and I was so nervous. And I had a word with myself. I remember being in my garden and saying, you're going to pick that bike up and you're going to ride it and you are going to stop letting fear dominate your life, like things that you're scared of or thinking, overthinking outcomes. So I won't do that because I might do it badly and then that will affect work. I won't do that because I might say the wrong thing. A brilliant thing that has happened to me, and this is very recent, and I think it's the menopause and age, which is that I have finally accepted that I am majorly flawed and there are lots of things that I can't do, but I still love myself. Like if I've done something badly, I've done them badly and I'll own them and I might agree with you.
It feels like you just turned a corner though.
I have. I feel like I have. Yeah.
What is on Bridget Christie's to-do list now in terms of life adventure? What do you have planned?
Being alive is a pretty good start.
Yeah.
I've just had a smear that came back clear and I had a mammogram that came back clear and I've stuck them up on my kitchen cupboards and I look at them every morning and I think, you've got another day. You've got another day, right? You got here. Isn't that amazing?
I've never heard anyone say that before, though. When that smear comes back and you're like, yes, but we never talk about it.
Because, well, how long have we got? You know, it's, I think,
yeah.
You don't, when you're younger, you don't think.
Well, it's, nothing's going to happen to you then.
Yeah. The adventure is being open and being alive and believing in things. Most importantly, yourself. The world is awesome and it's there for the taking and there's so much that we ignore, like in terms of nature and people, and I think just an appreciation of all those things that are there right in front of us. Look at your garden.
I know. It's one of the most mature things I've ever done with my entire life.
It's
literally
incredible.
Growing flowers.
I know, but that it's so...
But why didn't I do that when I was 24 instead of chasing awful boys called Nigel?
Yeah, what a waste.
Fucking waste of time.
Well, not Nigel.
Not fucking Nigel.
Not him.
Bridget Christie, we managed to have a lovely conversation where your stomach gurgles didn't get in the way. Thank you so much for comfort eating with me.
Thank you so much for having me.
This episode was produced by Daniel Stevens and Joel Grove. Executive producer is Lucy Greenwell. Original music is by Axel Cucutier. Mixing and sound design by Solomon King. If you liked Comfort Eating, please leave us a review and you can follow or subscribe so you never miss an episode. See you next time.
This is The Guardian.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.